This is BBC Radio Medway, where the time is now 27 minutes to 7. The Barming Music Evening on Friday the 14th of March at Barming Place featured a Kemp composer who was introduced by Harold Rogers.
Well, tonight's evening, tonight's Barming Music Evening, is slightly different. We're going to listen to the music of one composer, a Kent composer, Kerry Blyton. Yes, his aunt was Enid Blyton, and he'll be telling us about his music, and some of his music is recorded. Other parts of his music will be performed here at Barmy Music, performed by Caroline Moore, an ex-student of the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, who lives in South London and is heard quite a lot in the Midlands, and now being heard in the South. Lawrence Gerrish lives at Bromley, professor of pianoforte at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and pianist with the Kentish Opera Group since it started in the early 50s. Kerry Blyton was born at Beckenham, Kent, in 1932. He was educated at the grammar school there and showed, during the earlier part of his time, not merely an apathy towards music, but a marked hostility to it. Until when he was convalescing from polio, during 1947 or 48, he was taught the piano to while away the time. His natural bent for science throughout his school days took him in 1950 to University College London as an undergraduate in the Faculty of Natural Sciences, where he began studying for a special degree in zoology. After only 1 year there, his increasing interest in music, and he was being pretty prolific at this time, forced a decision upon him, and abandoning his studies, he left to work as a research assistant for the Gas Council while studying music privately. In 1953, he entered the Trinity College of Music, London. In 1954, won the Sir Granville Bantock Prize for Composition. And then he studied harmony, counterpoint, orchestration, and musical history. He got his degree in 1957, and then was awarded the Sir Winston Churchill Endowment Fund, a 10-month scholarship in composition in Denmark. He returned to England in 1958, became music editor to Mills Music for 5 years. And then since 1963, he's more or less freelanced as a composer, arranger, music editor, lecturer, and was appointed to the staff of the Trinity College of Music in London in September 1963 to teach harmony, counterpoint, orchestration, and composition. In September 1964, he was appointed music editor to the music department of Faber. And since then, he's been Benjamin Britten's editor, being responsible for the editorial work on Britten's works from Curlew River onwards. Now, Kerry Blyton is primarily a miniaturist, composing mostly songs, about 100 to date, and chamber music. His works include several groups of folk song arrangements, educational music, both piano and vocal, songs for children, a song cycle, a wind quintet, a concert overture, background music for television commercials, pieces for various mood music libraries, soundtracks for documentary films and television plays, and Doctor Who. And we're going to be hearing representative examples of all this music during this evening. We can't play it all. 100 songs. We can't play 100 songs. Let's first listen to a piece of music that he wrote a couple of years ago. One of his mood music pieces called Valse Musette. Thank you. think it's pretty obvious what that represented. Carey, any reason why you wrote that?
Well, I'd always wanted to write an evocation of the Parisian left bank. I'd always wanted to write something with a piano accordion in it. And when I got the chance to do something like this, I said to the publisher concerned, this is what I want to do. And he said, okay, fine, you do it. The only interesting thing, perhaps, about that piece is that it was recorded in Germany by a German orchestra. It's a Parisian piece, and it was written by an Englishman. So I suppose it's very international.
Now let's listen to something quite different. I'm going to say right away that this is one of my favorites amongst your works. It's called Symphony in Yellow. Tell us something about it before we hear it.
Well, it's quite an old piece. This was written in 1952, and it's a setting of a little-known poem by Oscar Wilde about London in the autumn. It's a rather interesting poem because it first appeared in the Centennial magazine in Australia in 18-whatever, and it's not really known over here at all. And I wrote it originally for voice, clarinet, and harp, but because, of course, singers don't often have clarinet players in tow for recitals, I did a version for voice and harp or piano, and although I have heard it done with a harp, tonight will be the first performance of the version for voice and piano, which I'm rather looking forward to.
Well, let's listen now to Symphony in Yellow, sung by Caroline Moore, accompanied by Lawrence Gerrish. the words of Oscar Wilde, the music of Cary Blyton, London in the Autumn, Symphony in Yellow. Cary, I like that very much. It's very lyrical. Is it a favourite of yours?
Yes, I think perhaps in a way it is. Of course, I don't write music like that anymore.
Well, we'll find out about that. Let's jump too far. Let's go back a year, can we?
Yes.
That was written in 1952. We're going to go back to 1951 for six short pieces for the piano. Would you like to explain generally what these are about? And then we'll get Lawrence Gerrish to play each one, and you'll introduce each one as we get.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Well, being a rather inferior pianist, I was foolish enough to write some pieces to try and improve my limited piano technique. Having written them, I realized I couldn't really play them very well. And curiously enough, tonight's performance, although they're 24 years old or whatever, is the first performance. But they are, of course, being played for you tonight by pianists.
You were still writing them this afternoon together, weren't you? You were still putting the final touches, more or less, after
24
years.
Yes, I'm afraid this is not really like me, but what happened was, of course, I wrote them before I had any proper formal training as a composer. And when Lawrence Gerrish worked on them, he found some very curious things, which I had to sort out. But I think I can say that they are now more or less in their final version, even if it's taken a quarter of a century to get them there. I'm not sure that it really was worth it, because since they're very short. But anyway, the first one is called Ivel.
Thank you.
Number four, scherzo.
Epigrams for piano, played by Lawrence Gerrish. Now we're going to jump the years from 1951 to 1973. A composer has to use every outlet he can find, and one important outlet is to write music for films. This is a special technique. It's a very difficult technique because the timing is so important, and the music has to coincide at each development with what is happening visually in front of you. Now, this film that we're going to hear some music from was called Capital City. It was a 28-minute colour film sponsored by the City of London, and it's a film about the city, and the music you'll hear goes on behind. Just describe this piece of music, which lasts exactly 2 minutes and 13 seconds. Tell us what is going on visually.
Well, quite a lot. It's changing rapidly. First, I'll have to read it because I wouldn't remember all this. Commuters hurrying into London. A train comes into Waterloo Station. Busy traffic, etc. Then we cut to children playing in the school playground. And here, girls and boys come out to play as heard on the violin along Stefan Grappelli. And then the first reference in the music to the letters E, C, G, D. Export Council Guarantee Department, that is on the piano. a horse and cart slowly pass in front of the Bank Underground sign. And here's another reference to a tune associated with London, My Little Cock Minute, which you hear on the oboe and the clarinet. And then there are further pans of the city, including a close-up of a statue of a dragon, that is the horn, and ending with a panorama of the entire city. As you can see, quite a lot.
Music from the film Capital City. We're going to stay in the year 1973 because you also wrote the background music to a film that was made for the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, and this presented a great number of problems because the film was without any spoken commentary, so the music had to in fact supply the commentary. It was a film that showed the beauty of bird flight in all its many and varied aspects: gliding, soaring, hovering, plummeting, etc. And the music comprises a theme representing bird flight and 10 variations played by the London Saxophone Quartet. And we're going to hear three extracts, so would you like to introduce each extract to tell us what's going on again?
Yes, well, the first one is the music that you hear over the opening titles and simply the theme on which the variations are based. And then we have the third variation, which accompanied a scene of Arctic terns hovering, and then the music right at the end of the film, variation 9, which was various groups of birds taking off en masse: ducks, sparrows, oyster catchers, widgeon, small waders, which leads straight into variation 10. A mass of oyster catchers taking off, and then various other birds, and finally, something which is very difficult for the London Saxophone Quartet, a small group of sanderling fly out to sea, and the music ends with a chord held for a very long time over the end credits while these birds disappear from view.
Right, well, now let's close our eyes. Let's take the first one, first of all, bird flight. Thank you. the next variation, and just imagine here Arctic terns hovering. Without the pictures, you could get those Arctic terns hovering, couldn't you? Now let's have that final piece, and listen specially for that very long note at the end where a group of sandlings fly away out to sea. Took a lot of breath, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
1973 was a pretty prolific year for you. You wrote more mood music, didn't you?
Yes.
And there's one piece that we've got that we're going to play, again recorded in Stuttgart, called Girl Friday. Why Girl Friday?
Oh, that's, that's a very difficult question. It's far easier to write a piece than it is to think of a title. Well, at least I often find that. And the thing about the Mood Music Library catalogues is that the titles have to be sort of short and sharp and up to date. And I suddenly thought of Girl Friday, you know, when I was going up an escalator on the underground. I thought that sounded like a nice title because the music was pert and quick. And in fact, the publisher liked it very much.
You'd written the music, but you hadn't got a title.
That's right.
And you saw a Girl Friday on the escalator.
Well, probably.
And now we know what you do on escalators.
That's right.
So let's listen to the music and see whether it's Girl Friday to everybody else. Thank you. quite long for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is, really. About a quarter of an hour. Well, 14 minutes. It's the 10th cycle. I wrote for voice and piano alone. And it's a work dedicated to my mother and father because they brought the poems, the very beautiful poems, to my attention. And the poems are by a French writer called Carmen Bernos de Gansold. But I set them in translation by River Garden. And they are prayers to God by different animals. And because the poems capture so well the different attributes of various animals, the songs offer a great deal of scope to a singer for musical characterizations. And I seem to be saying this about most words. This is the first broadcast performance of this cycle.
That's lovely. And we're going to hear them sung by Caroline Moore, accompanied by Lawrence Gerrish. And Caroline's going to introduce each song, isn't she?
That's right, yes.
The first one is The Prayer of the Cock.
Oh.
the prayer of the mouse. I am so little and grey, dear God. How can you keep me in mind?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caroline Moore and Lawrence Gerrish. Not easy songs to sing.
No, not certainly not the last one.
And it was interesting how you got the character of each animal. Your interest was zoology, wasn't it? You were interested in animals.
Yes. Actually, if I may say, those songs had their first performance last April, I think, in London. I got a very bad review because the reviewer thought they were neither serious nor amusing. But I don't think he actually heard the words, because I think the words are so wonderful, and they are both serious and amusing, and of course the two things are not incompatible.
Well, now let's go on to some piano music. Again, you're using the piano to describe, aren't you, to actually capture some musical forms. These were written in 1960, and it was your fifth group of piano pieces. Would you like to describe them, and then Lawrence Gerrish will play their three in this set?
Yes, well, I suppose one might say that I started with the premise that one could take a musical device and then try and write a piece based on that. And the first one is a passacaglia, a ground bass that repeats itself. And the second one is a chaconne, where the harmonic progression repeats itself. And the last one is an ostinato, an obstinate bass that goes on repeating. So in a way, these were pieces about musical devices which were ones of repetition. And I think the challenge there was to try and make music interesting in spite of all the repetition. And the first one is called Waltz, and the second one, Pastoral, and the third one, the Organ Grinder. Thank you. number 3, the organ grinder.
It must be very frustrating for you as a composer that you can't play these as well as that.
Well, that's true, of course.
I mean, you never really hear them, do you?
Well, you hear them in your head, but it's a rather limited edition, you know.
Let's hear 3 more impressions. That was the first public performance, wasn't it, of the group?
Yes. Can I tell you a very quick little story?
Yes.
Very quick one. I thought that the last one, the organ grinder, was so catchy it really ought to go places and do a lot for me. And at the time I wrote them, Clive Lithgow was doing his night music program, My Piano and I. So I sent them to him and tried tactfully to say, would you please play the organ grinder? And he wrote back and saying, I think they're lovely pieces. I'm broadcasting the pastoral on such and such a date. So it never came off, you know.
Well, now let's go on to the 3 impressions for piano. But these are not written at one time. They've been collected over a period of 10 years.
Yes. That sounds like I'm a very slow composer, of course, but actually 2 were written in 1964 and 1 in 1954. And I have subsequently arranged them for string orchestra. And tonight again, like the last group of piano pieces, it is the first performance of the piano originals. They are really travel impressions, and in fact the string suite version is called On Holiday. And there are 1 or 2 perhaps interesting comments about each one.
Shall we take them separately?
Sure,
we'll
yes.
do the first one and Lawrence will play.
Well, the first one is called Denmark. In the Deer Park, as you said earlier on, I had a scholarship to Denmark, and Djurhavn, which is the Deer Park at Klampenborg, just outside Copenhagen, is very popular with tourists and Copenhageners alike, who go to feed the deer that live in the beech forest there. And the interesting thing about it is that motor vehicles are strictly prohibited, and if you want to travel within Djurhavn, you have to do it by pony and trap. And since it's a Danish piece, I dedicated it to my teacher at the music conservatorium there, Johan Jessild, a very marvelous composer who is not known very much over here. But he liked it anyway.
Thank you.
subtitle, Brittany Beach. And in fact, this was actually written on a beach in Brittany one hot sultry afternoon in August 1954.
How do you write music on a beach with the sand and the sea?
Well, when the sea is as cold as that and you don't want to go in, any excuse is as good as any other, I think. So I stayed behind and wrote music.
Thank you.
music of Carey Blyton, composer from Kent. We've heard film music, piano music, songs, mood music. We're about two-thirds of the way through the program. And now we're going to hear some TV music. T, writing music for television, is it like writing music for films?
Well, yes, basically it's very, very, very similar. You're working to timings. In fact, there aren't very many differences. The only difference, I suppose, being, and I'm not talking from experience, because I have not written music for a feature film. But of course, if you write music for big feature films, then you're in a very big league financially, and I don't think the television can ever offer that kind of epic film music budget that you get on films like, well, Murder on the Orient Express. So really the only difference is a financial one, I think, really.
Now, the first film that we're going to hear the music from, many people may remember. It's a Somerset Maugham adaptation.
Well, it's very hard, of course, to say what a play is about in 1 minute, and I won't really attempt to do this. The first extract that we have comes from Footprints in the Jungle. This was one of the plays in the BBC TV second series of Somerset Maugham short story adaptations in the series called Rule Britannia, made in 1970. And of course, it's a typical Somerset Maugham story, this time set in Edwardian Malaya. Briefly, the story concerns the murder of a plantation owner by his wife's lover. And it's rather gorgeous because they try and think of a way that he won't find out that she's going to have the lover's baby. And the best solution that they come up with is that if he's dead, he won't know. So, which is fairly final, of course. And the music is scored for various kinds of flute and several kinds of clarinet, including the basset horn and an instrument I'm enormously fond of, the contrabass clarinet, which is an octave lower than the bass clarinet. Cello, piano, both prepared and unprepared, and two percussion players. And each protagonist has his or her own instrument and his or her own particular music. And oriental scales are used to obtain a sort of Far Eastern atmosphere. And we're going to hear, I think, just one extract, which is towards the end of the play. It's a long, fairly long sequence. I say long. A lot of the music cues, of course, are terribly short. So if you have a music cue of a minute or more, that is a long music cue. And it alternates between Margaret, the wife, having Theo's baby, Theo being the lover, and Leslie Gaze, the assistant commissioner of police, searching the jungle with native police for various articles of Regis, that's the husband, which the murderer jettisoned at the scene of the crime, wallet and watch and things like that. And throughout the sequence, native music alternates with Margaret and Theo's music quite clearly, and there's a brief moment of silence when the baby is born, followed by Margaret's joy on the cello by itself. And just before this, if you listen out, the player concerned here was highly amused by this. The contrabass clarinet is used to convey Margaret's labor pains and birth pangs. And as he said, as a married man with a child and having watched gerbils give birth, he felt that he was the right man to play this music.
Well, let's listen to it.
Thank you.
It's interesting how you've got the sound of the East there and the jungle and so on.
Yes.
And you've done this in the next one too. I notice here that you've got an oboe doubling Heckelphone. You use some peculiar instruments, don't you?
Well, I mean, one of the joys of writing for television is that, in particular, BBC Television are enormously broad-minded and rather wonderful people. They say, well, you're the expert, you do what you think is right. And so if one feels a particular instrument is right, the music, you can have it, and no one complains or worries about that. I mean, it's up to you. And in this particular, in the next one, we're going to hear an extract from Before the Party, which was one of the Somerset Maugham plays in the first series in 1969. Again, it's a sort of grim, ironic story of human passion set in the Far East. And again, there's a murder in it. It concerns a district officer who's drinking himself to death. He comes back to England to find a wife, hoping that this will help him stop drinking. And it doesn't. They have a child. There's a short reconciliation for a year. And he goes on drinking. And in the end, she kills him. And the thing about the Heckelphone is that Joss Ackland was playing the husband, and he's a very big man. And I wanted something pretty weighty, but a bassoon, of course, has humorous connotations. So that was really why I chose that. You'd like to know what the music is about, wouldn't you?
Yes, we would, yes.
Well, the same kind of lineup with the orchestra, with a small group of four or five players, many of them doubling many different instruments. Millicent's wife is in bed, and she listens to Harold, her husband, and two visitors playing cards and drinking too much. And then you hear, in the play, Harold is heard outside taking a shower. He comes into the bedroom. Millicent pretends to be asleep. Harold's very drunk. He drinks more whiskey from the bedside table, which is there regularly now for his malaria, he says. And he falls onto the bed in a drunken stupor. And Millicent's theme, which is on the cello at the outset, you hear at the outset, and Harold's, where the Heckelphone comes in, where the music, of course, is drunken, you hear towards the end.
Pigeon Fancier, and I picked this one out particularly because I thought it was so descriptive of what was going on.
Yes, the Pigeon Fancier was a BBC Television play for today. That was in 1971, and this is the music for the closing titles. It's about a miner who has retired, and his obsession is homing pigeons. He's a pigeon fancier. And he's so convinced that his pigeon is going to win this particularly important event And in fact, as the play proceeds, sort of everything goes wrong for him. And his only son, his school teacher, is going to emigrate, go to Australia. And the play ends with him disconsolately waiting for the pigeon to come home. It's quite obviously so late back that he couldn't possibly have won. And what is interesting about this music really is that although you hear the flute and the alto flute, it is in fact the same player. It's done, of course, by means of superimposed recording. So the slow music, sad music on the alto flute really represents the old man, and the quicker, brighter music on the ordinary flute represents the pigeon flying.
Now we come to the final group of your music. You're writing for children.
Yes.
You've got a marvellous sense of humour, as we'll discover. And we're going to end this group and the programme and the evening with some music from Doctor Who that you've written. And then we're going to get everybody here singing some of your, two of your songs that you've written for children. But first, we're going to hear just three short groups of songs on different subjects from Caroline Moore and Lawrence Gerrish. So would you just like to introduce those?
Yes, there's not very much to say about them really. They're little sets of songs written for school use, although several solo singers have in fact taken them up and used them extensively in schools' concerts, and even in recitals in hospitals and music clubs and so on. And they are settings of humorous poems. They were all written in 1963, and six of the nine songs are also rounds, which of course are very useful in the classroom for part singing. And I seem to say this about every item. Tonight's performance is the first broadcast performance of all three groups, and I'll ask Caroline to introduce each group and the title.
The first group is three food songs. The first one, Early Bacon, has words by Archibald Stoddart Walker, Sink Song by J.A. Linden, and Bacon and Eggs, words by A.P. Herbert. Deep in joy for early Vale, words by Harry Graham. Poor Fly, anonymous. Swatter Life by Don Marquis. Kerry Blyton, The Elephant, again anonymous. Thank you.
much, Caroline Moore and Lawrence Gerrish. And it's, I think, easy to see, after hearing those, how Kelly Blight moved into the world of Doctor Who. And I think Doctor Who's been taking up some of your time recently, hasn't he?
Yes. I'm writing music at Morley's at the moment. And the third one I've been involved
in. Well, don't sound so unhappy about it.
Well, I'm only unhappy because I'm having to wait for timing, and it's always very worrying.
Well, we're going back to 1969, aren't we? We're going to hear two little pieces out of Doctor Who and the Silurians.
Well, right? Yes, that's right. Again, how can one begin to describe what it's all about? The Silurians are reptilian-like creatures who once ruled the world, and they've been in sort of hibernation, and then there are various goings on in underground and underground research establishment, which sort of wakes them up, and they start being difficult. very. The music was rather interesting, the music in this one, for me, because it was scored for two clarinet players, horn, cello, prepared and unprepared piano, and percussion. And in fact, the music ran for about 25 minutes over the 7-episode serial. But by means of doubling, playing all different instruments, the two clarinet players played a total of 13 wind instruments, including medieval white ball recorders, the entire family of crumb horns, most of the clarinet family, including the contrabass clarinet.
A Silurian with a crumb horn, that sounds marvelous.
Well, it seemed the right sort of instrument, because the director said, these are very, very, very alien. Please give me a very alien sound.
You wrote, in fact, something like 70 different pieces of music for the series.
Yeah, that's true. There were about 70 music cues, as they're called. I mean, roughly about 10 to an episode. And these, again, I mean, always the same, can vary from a few seconds, that's called a sting, to more substantial symphonies of at least a minute.
We didn't think it was worth your while or ours to play you a piece lasting a second, but this piece lasts for 30 seconds. Would you like to describe it?
Well, it's very simple. Every time you saw Silurians or shadows on the wall of Silurians or horrible, nasty plastic hands appearing on walls, one got this sort of sound, which is one of the crumb horns, depending on the size of the Silurian. the one we're going to hear is the biggest Silurian of all. With prepared piano, that is, I mentioned prepared piano a number of times, and this is where you put metal wedges and various things in the strings of the piano to make it sound not like a piano, and glockenspiel. So the effect of this was quite deliberately unpleasant and alien.
Silurian and all with his crumb horn.
Yeah.
And now the last piece.
Well, I'm very fond, I was very fond of the monster in this, because this was a kind of pet dinosaur that the Silurians used as a kind of watchdog to keep people out. But what was rather lovely about it was that there was a little man called Fred inside this, who was always complaining about how hot it was and where was the tea. And I think the nicest of all was one occasion where everyone went to tea and forgot him. And when we came back, he was almost asphyxiated and very, very angry. And the language was unbelievable. But anyway, the monster, whenever you heard the contrabass clarinet with rumbling piano effects, usually by means of ping pong balls over the bass strings, you knew that the Fred was round the corner.
Well, let's listen to Fred and the Monster. Everybody here, two songs. It comes from a splendid book called Bananas in Pyjamas. It's a book of nonsense, and the words have been written by Kerry Blyton as well as the music. This first one, what we're going to do is we're going to get Caroline Moore to sing it with Lawrence Gerrish, and then we'll all sing it. So the first one is Bananas, and then the second one is the luxurious shoehorn, and I believe that Mr. Blyton has also got some additional sound effects to put in to this. We'll wait till he gathers his orchestra about him. You see, he's a man of many parts. Right, well, let's have a rehearsal first with the professionals, and let's see what it sounds like. Tuesdays they all try to catch them unawares. Let's try it through once more, shall we? All together, right? Let's try the other one, the luxurious shoehorn. Let's hear it first of all through by the professionals. You've got to do it. Not a very good piano player, but my word, he can... What's that called?
That is a kazoo.
You play the kazoo marvellously. Right, now let's all end the programme by singing it together. Right?
Oh,
That Barming Music Evening was recorded at Barming Place on the 14th of March. Kent composer Kerry Blyton was talking to Harold Rogers, and the soloists were Caroline Moore and Maurice Gerrish. And Lawrence Gerrish.